Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Hey, everybody, Tracy here, and welcome to the show. So glad you're here with me today, and I can't even begin to tell you how incredibly excited I am about today's guest. You are in for such a treat. I have had my eye on this guest for quite some time, and you're going to find out why as we get into the show today. But today, I have Elizabeth Golombeski, who, listen to these credentials, she is a nationally recognized relationship, dating, and life coach. And I'm going to just go ahead and throw in expert there. She founded an Ignite Divine Sparks coaching services in 2009. And since then, Elizabeth has helped men and women throughout the country increase their consciousness in dating, create happy, healthy, committed relationships, and even better, succeed in life in general. Elizabeth's inspirational outlook and heartfelt approach resonates with people who value love and connection. She exemplifies her motto, ABC, always be choosing, which means our life is created by the quality of decisions we make. Unless we awaken to greater consciousness, which allows us to make decisions from a mindset of love, we will unconsciously continue to make decisions and take action that stifles love and connection. Elizabeth is a certified life and relationship coach. She's created the Awakened Dating and Relationship Program using the same tools and resources she used to become more conscious in her own life and build her 13-year marriage. We're going to find out more about Elizabeth today, but you can also find her at ignitedivinesparks.com. Elizabeth, welcome, and thank you so much for being here with me today.
Hi, Tracy. It's great to be here. Thank you for that wonderful intro. I just want to sit back and listen to more.
Well,
how wonderful I'm doing.
I tell you what, I got to tell everybody, I met Elizabeth, and honestly, I've never met her live. Our entire relationship has been internet and phone based. And I met her down in Austin. I became aware of her work down in Austin, Texas, and was immediately attracted to the work that she does. And then I had a couple of conversations with her, and you can't just but help but just fall in love with her. There's a calmness and a peace about her that is just a joy to be around, but it's real clear that she has a real firm grip on what she does, the work that she does. So, Elizabeth, tell us what you do. What is a relationship expert, a romance coach? What do you do?
Well, I help people uncover their blocks to love, to having happy, healthy, wonderful relationships, whatever their life goals are as well. We all get blocked either by our unproductive attitudes or limiting beliefs, by not having the skills we may need. I never went to school to learn about dating and relationships. That wasn't a required course when I was going to college. Mm-hmm. And for most people, how do we learn about it? Well, from parents, from culture, from media, from friends, from what we think we're supposed to be doing. And is this, it doesn't make us ready, confident, and really knowing what we're doing as far as dating and relationships go. And so a lot of what I do is teaching people what a relationship is, as well as uncovering what their beliefs are and how those might be stopping them. Basically, Tracy, in practical terms, I help people find out where to go to meet compatible people for them, how to start conversations, how to ask somebody out for a date, how to navigate the first few dates, or I also call them meetings, that you have with another, with somebody that you're interested in, and then how to go from date 2, 3, 4 and into a happy, healthy, committed relationship.
Wow, that sounds like a big job.
Wow. It doesn't happen overnight. We do this in steps. And a lot of this is creating new habits. You know, a lot of people that I work with have had a string or years and decades of thinking things that really don't help them in love and dating. And well, so...
Don't you think that, well, I want to jump back, but I want you to hold your thought for a minute because I want you to keep going. But I love what you said earlier about learned behavior and, you know, not learning this in school. And I think it's, you know, I feel that I certainly have felt that way about relationships. I felt that way about voice. I felt that way about communication. I felt that way about child rearing. We do what we know. Is that what you're saying? What we've seen, what we've been told, what we've heard.
Yes.
That's what we do. And that doesn't necessarily make it right or good or functional or even bad.
Exactly. And just a lot of what we see in the movies. I mean, movies are 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. You know, boy meets girl, they fall in love and live happily after ever after. A lot of what the culture, our cultural norms are, as well as movies and books, they don't reveal how much effort there is in creating a happy, healthy, committed relationship. The dating phase and the, oh, this is great, the romance phase is pretty much where we stop. Then when relationships tend to get hard or things come up and you've never dealt with this, you don't have good communication skills or loving communication skills, what do you do? Well, most of us say goodbye and it'll happen with somebody else. This just wasn't the right person. And we make the mistake that if I only find the right person, this will all fall into place. And that's one of the biggest, I think, limiting beliefs or unconscious beliefs we have. I just need to find the right person. Yeah, you need to find the right person, but you need to be the right person first.
So, and I love that. And I want to ask you something about that. It goes all the way back to core. It's right. You know what you just said. It sounds like you're saying we put it external. It's I got to find them rather than looking at that core deficit within ourselves. Is what
you
it
hit the
like
nail on the head.
Yeah,
you hit the nail on the head, and it's so much easier in our culture to go outside, or even our planet to go outside, rather than to go inside, because it just doesn't seem to make sense, because we don't see this modeled very much in movies, in magazines. This is not modeled. So you're so right, Tracy.
And don't you think some of that is bark for the trees? I want love and I want it now. And I'm looking right in front of me and I've got to get out there and I've got to find somebody. All I'm seeing is the bark. You think that's part of it too?
Well, I've never heard that expression, but I like it. I've never heard that expression. I guess I would say people really want love in relationships, but they may not be ready for them.
And that's a tough pill to swallow, I bet, for some.
Yeah. You know, most of the things I work with, work on with people is the pre-dating work. When it's a single person wanting a relationship, it's the pre-dating work. It's the, like I said, before the attitudes, the beliefs, the inner confidence, the inner self-love that one feels. And it's also clarifying a lot of somebody's life vision and values, which again, we don't sit down and do normally.
Yeah. I love that. You know, as someone who's been a lifelong seeker of peace and joy and constant improvement of self, you know, I love that inner journey piece. And I know for me, for years, it was external. And for me, my particular thing was blame. As long as I could throw the blame on somebody else, well, you don't like me and you didn't do this and look at the way you did that, then I didn't have to accept any responsibility for maybe I was a jerk or maybe I was the one that didn't get it right.
Yeah. Are you saying that you were in a victim mentality?
Oh, yes.
It's you. It's them. It's
Yes.
I know. So many people are.
Really?
Man, and that makes you kind of, it's like a ship sailing on the ocean and saying, I'm not going to control this because I'm just going to wait for everything else around me to knock me here and knock me there. And it's the ocean's fault that I landed 2,000 miles away from where I wanted to.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah, that's really common, Tracy. And good for you for seeing that because that is empowering, no?
Yeah. Well, everything shifts when you do. And so I wonder, you know, do we just have to wait until we are ready for that moment to realize, hey, wait a minute. You know, I remember being at a party years ago. I mean, I was still in my 20s. I was still in college. And my boyfriend was all across. Now, talk about vulnerability telling this story. My boyfriend was all the way across the room. I knocked over a glass of wine and I hollered across the room, look at what you just made me do.
Yeah. And it seemed like it made sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's how that, but you know, but the question, you know, do we just fumble along until we do at one point, you know, do people wake up and say, oh my gosh, it's me, it's not them. Or is there a tip you can give the audience to speed that process up? Or is it just stepping into that awareness?
Well, it's all of the above.
Okay.
So one client I'm working with right now has reached, okay, he's in his 40s. He has been concentrated on his career and kind of sort of dating. But now he's in his 40s and he's serious about, I'm in my 40s. I really want a relationship. Well, in talking to him, I find out that he's considering himself the victim of women because he can't trust women. And this is just, you know, generally speaking, I can't trust women. And I ask him why, and it's because of his past. Past his not only his family history, but a couple girlfriends he had in high school and college. Okay. So one of the ways to wake up to whether you're in a victim mentality is, number one, are you having no luck? Are you not making traction? Are you repeating the same patterns of behavior, of relationships, picking the same type of men over and over again? Have you just become sick and tired of trying to do this on your own? And you're like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Because lots of my clients need to say, do you realize that this is happening? Have you ever looked at this being like you're not taking responsibility? And there's no judgment. It's okay if you're not taking responsibility. There's no good or bad here. Mm-hmm. You may have just not been aware that you're not taking responsibility. Mm-hmm. So specifically to your question about a tip that you can do is just stop when you're feeling angry at something or something hasn't gone your way or, you know, something hasn't. Well, those are the two main things. And say, wow, so what is my responsibility in this? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Is it because did he decide not to see me because so it feels like I'm being rejected again. And am I blaming the guy for guys just don't understand me? Or is there something about myself that I'm not seeing? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a long answer to your question.
No, it was a great answer. And so really, you know, what the golden nugget out of that is, we have to pause long enough to ask some questions within ourselves.
You know, exactly.
Could this be about, is this about me? What's my part in this is kind of what I heard you say.
Exactly. What's my part? And the thing about doing that is we create a judgment like, oh, I did that and I'm bad or I'm wrong. Or so what's my part? And taking the judgment out of it and just seeing, oh, so perhaps I wasn't as vulnerable as maybe I could have been. Or what's my part? Perhaps I didn't specifically say to somebody, this is what I would really like in a relationship. So looking at that and long enough, like you said, to say, that's where I may do differently next time. Not that I need to do better, but just that I need to be aware and do it differently that next time.
I love that. And, you know, you just said a word that is part of the core of my work. As everybody knows, I'm a voice expert, voice and communication. And over the years in this work, I have learned and will put my entire income on this statement. The voice is the most vulnerable piece we have next to the heart. And you use that term vulnerability. And do you think so much of that blame and that, I'm just not good with women. And, you know, well, he's just a jerk. And all of that comes from a challenge within ourselves to be vulnerable. I mean, you're the queen of the heart here, you know. I mean, you trump my voice. Vulnerability's got to be something you deal with daily.
Yes. So why aren't we vulnerable? We're afraid of rejection.
Yeah.
We're afraid we're going to get hurt. We're afraid we're not going to fit in. And Tracy, you've helped me. For everybody out there, I've been working with Tracy and seeing what a large part that voice, different aspects of voice make in connecting with people. And as far as vulnerability goes, a lot of times we use our voice or the tone of our voice or the speed of our voice or not more mumbling, and you know this, Tracy, not to help us not connect with people.
Yeah.
So voice is, we stay in what I call our comfort zones, and there's a comfort zone of your voice. Mm-hmm. We stay in our comfort zone of our voice or comfort zone of, I can't go after, not, and I don't even want to use that term go after, but I can't connect with somebody that I'm really attracted to because they're too attractive, or what if I get rejected, or they're too, you know, it's in a nutshell, vulnerability has to do with what I call otheritis. And otheritis is something I think most of us are plagued with, which is, what are they going to think of me? Mm. What is the other person going to think of me? And until you do the work that we were just talking about and coming inside and saying, you know what, it doesn't matter what the other person is going to think about me, because it matters what I think of myself. Yeah. And you've got to know yourself in order to say, you know what, John, I'm trying to think of, a recent client I have that's doing really well in our sessions together, I'll call her Julie, has never been able to say, to set what's called a boundary, an emotional boundary, and say, you know what, I don't want to do something because she was afraid of rejection. And if he rejects me, I'll have to start all over, or I'll never find love, or whatever the thought process is. So she went to, I can't tell him that I really want some of the things I really want to do in a relationship, and some of the things I would like him to do for me, like listening to me, like asking me more questions about my day. I can't do that because what will he think? Well, we got to the point in working together that she was able to do that. And you know what happens? Number one, immediately she felt more empowered, like a weight had been lifted off her. This is about, you know, I'm not putting this on what he's going to think. I'm putting this on what I need from a relationship and being true to myself. So vulnerability.
So, yes, such great stuff there. And, you know, and that's the link right there. You know, I can ask the question, is communication key in love connections? Well, I don't have to ask it anymore. You just answered it. And, you know, I don't dive into the specialty of love, but for many reasons, but certainly in business and in life and experiences within myself, that I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just not going to say anything. By the time a company brings me in to do communication work, it's on, you know, red alert, because they've stopped talking. They've started slamming doors and rolling eyes, and everything is communicated in tone because of that fear of saying, you know what? It bothers me when you log into my computer when I'm not here. But they can't even say that for fear of what that other person is going to say or do or think. So the stakes get a billion times higher in love, I think. And that's kind of what you're saying.
It is. You hit the nail on the head again. Yes.
So, you know, I guess a big part of your work is teaching people that's, you know, it sounds like from this last client you were talking about, that safety in communication that is so empowering. And that's what so many of them need, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Safety in communication, meaning you talk from a grounded place. Okay. Breathing. Talking from a grounded place rather than a knee-jerk reaction. Oh my God, you know, and which a lot of us do. Knee-jerk reactions are generally coming from our ego, which is fear. Grounded reactions are coming from our more centered, if you want to call it your spiritual self, your grounded self, your authentic self. It's the way we're talking right now. It's not like, oh my God, Tracy. So I'm sorry, I have to tell you this, but you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
A lot of it is the tone and the way you say it. So talking about uncomfortable stuff, sometimes like one of the things that I've been working on with you is on getting my voice out, which is ingrained from childhood.
Oh, I know, we were talking about pause. Taking that time to pause.
We both get
so in our zone that we can't remember what was right behind us. But that taking that pause and making that response of speaking the truth from the, you know, from a grounded place, let me pause and not let me say, you know what, it's over, and say, I really need to talk about this. And pausing is crucial in my work. It's got to be crucial in yours as well.
Absolutely. And that pause may be in the form of, I need a timeout. Let me talk to you later this week. I need a pause. Just bear with me for a couple minutes, or, you know, I'll call you in a few hours when I can think this through. So not that we're going to do it all the time, but when I work with clients and they have to do something uncomfortable, which may be a lot of times is end a relationship that's not working, or tell somebody that they just met, hey, you know, I like you, but I don't see us compatible in the future.
Yeah.
We role play that in my office or outside in a social situation first, so they can know what it sounds like and how it feels to do that from a grounded place. So one of the biggest things in communication that works for my clients is actually role playing a difficult situation.
I bet that role play is key for your work. Just because of that whole fear of rejection thing, I'm not going to say anything. And like I say, I'm not an expert in what you do, but I would imagine that creates the longevity of a bad relationship or a fear of even getting in a relationship is that whole, I'm just not going to say anything. I'll just put up with this.
Yeah, exactly. Or here's back to this magical thinking, like somehow it's just going to work out, or maybe it really doesn't matter to me that much when it really does.
Yes.
Or it's just going to magically dissolve. You know, a lot of us want our partners, our dates, our friends, or whoever to be mind readers.
Yes.
And I get a client recently said, well, he should have known that. Really? He should have known that? Well, and that's the thing about having another pair of eyes to kind of see where your thoughts are. Because when she was telling me, that was just like, yeah, he should know that. And what do we do with when we're saying somebody should have known that? He should have known that not to just come over unexpectedly. Well, maybe, but really, you should have told him. That's one of the things you need to speak about.
I heard something the other day that I just thought was brilliant, and it was about relationships, but I processed it in terms of communication, and it was something like, and you'd be the expert to ask about this, but it was something like men communicate in signals, and women communicate in words, and so don't get mad at her when she misses the signal. You get mad at her for 3 days, but she didn't even get the signal because she communicates differently. And I thought that was so fascinating.
It is fascinating. And you know, I haven't heard that before. I'm going to look into that more. But a book that really changed my personal relationship interaction and that I recommend to clients is the perennial classic, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Great book.
Because although it was written, I don't know, a couple decades
ago.
The basic communication styles between men and women, and again, I don't want to generalize all men are like this or all women are like that. Mm-hmm. However, it does give you, I know it helped me in my personal relationship, especially when my husband wanted to go away and not talk. When I found out that's what a lot of guys do, they want to go into their caves for a while and process and be left alone. And I would be tugging, please talk to me, please. Look. And that just did not go anywhere. So learning about the different communication styles, just generally men and women, is very helpful. And that's one of the things I try to instill.
Yeah.
My clients. And then, Tracy, it just kind of a segue here. I noticed that, I'm sure you have, and you've worked with people, and that is a lot of times successful, assertive, high powered men and women talk from that tone. It's a lower tone, it's more it's just more like this, and you can probably do it better than I. And some of my clients are women that are successful attorneys, real estate brokers, and they, you know, they're out, they're asking me, well, how do I start a conversation? And one of the things I've begun working with them on is, well, what's your tone of voice?
Yeah.
Right. Because a lot of times when a woman is talking like more like a man, it may cause men to feel a little intimidated. Mm. And bringing their voice down also brings their vulnerability up.
Yep. Yep. Oh, it's all vulnerability related. It goes all the way back to true voice. You know, I teach true voice. And have you created an alternate voice? You know, and within that, and this sounds like a little bit of a combo with what you're talking about, not only do we tend to get out of our true voice because to protect ourselves, but what I've been studying over the last three or four years, which is proving to be true repeatedly, is that emotion, there's an undertone in that voice. You hear what you hear, but you can hear the emotion underneath. Mm-hmm. You know, I just recently worked with a delightful man who he came to me and he said, I think I'm repelling people with my voice. And I said, well, let's see what's going on. And this was a business, it was for business. I don't work on the romance side. And I listened to him and I worked with him for a few minutes. And I said, who are you so angry at? And he said, do you hear it? And I said, well, tell me what the deal is with your dad. And he said, how did you know that? And I said, I hear that. It is like lava about to come out of, you know, and repeatedly since then, you know, I worked with a woman and, you know, she had a big issue with her mother and her voice was shifting and going high. And it was getting up there when, you know, and it was almost a defensive tone, you know, it was very edgy. And I said, what's the deal with your mom? What's, or your dad? I'm not sure, you know, well, she had always been told, don't say anything, be quiet, stop talking. And so I don't think that the audience sits, you know, our audience sits around going, well, clearly there's an issue with the mother, but I think that they feel that, you know, I think they feel that barrier. I know they feel that barrier.
Exactly. That's a barrier. Exactly.
You know, and so I think tone of voice in my work certainly is huge, but it sounds like tone of voice, you know, and just from a layman's perspective, I think, you know, I use the example all the time, you know, in relationships. How is it? Are you doing okay? I'm fine. Well, your words say that you're fine, but your tone says you're about to kick my, you know, tail. So I bet you do have to work a lot with tone with people.
I do. And I have just one client right now, a gentleman I'm working with, Tracy, and this may be something that you and I talk about later, but that he always sounds like he has a frog in the back of his throat, mm-hmm. like he needs to clear the throat. Mm-hmm. And we've been working together for some time, and I've noticed it from the beginning. And I thought, well, we'll just work together and see how his, you know, how he's doing dating with these tips. But it's a big deal. It's come to be a big deal. And so that's one of the things we're going to need to address. And I don't think, I mean, he's never said anything. I don't think he even realizes that he's coming across that way. So
most people don't. And just by hearing what you say, it sounds like he's trained himself to keep his sound in the back of his throat. It's a protection thing. So many people keep their sound locked in the back of their throat. It's all done on the subconscious level and then laid into the muscle memory. But there's some kind of fear about letting those words out. Mm-hmm. So there's been a compensation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've got a question I want to ask that was, you know, we talked about what we were going to talk about. But I want to jump back to something you said earlier. The fairy tale.
Yes.
Has the fairy tale ruined us?
If we haven't woken up from it, yes.
Yeah.
It has. The fairy tale, it's going to magically fall into place. He's going to save me. She's going to, I need to help her in some, you know, Cinderella.
Sleeping
Beauty, Knight in Shining Armor, a lot of guys feel like I got to help her some way, and girl and women feel like I need help.
Yeah.
Or this wonderful, this magical guy is going to just drop into my life or knock on my door and everything's going to be okay, without realizing that, yeah, it'll be okay as long as you're willing to do, make the fairy tale in here happen as well.
Yeah. And the communication, I would think, would again become key in all. There is no such thing as a perfect relationship, is there?
That's it. There is, yeah. No. Well, we could talk about, is there anything such as perfect? No, I mean,
right.
I don't think there's
right.
anything as perfect. I think that if you want to call a perfect relationship, it's in this day and age, in 2016, I think relationships are meant no longer for us to procreate as much as they were in the 40s and mm-hmm. 50s. Now I think relationships are more about helping us reach a higher plateau, a higher self in our life, and engaging in my relationship certainly has ups and downs, but what is the juice? What is the thing that holds it together? It's the willingness on both our parts to treat each other with respect, to communicate from authenticity, and to not to own our part of it, not be a victim or say, you made me do that.
Yeah.
You know? And then,
love it.
And then just as a sort of segue, Tracy, what are we all doing these days? Texting.
Mm.
We're not communicating. Texting.
Oh boy. You got my button.
And
talk
I find
that.
Well, that whole world of texting, whether you're a guy, whether you're a girl, and you're texting each other, the whole world, when you step into texting, so many times it creates a false sense of you're having a relationship. It creates this pseudo relationship that you're going to talk to each other, even after just meeting each other and spending an hour together. All of a sudden you start texting, and because everybody else is doing it, and then all of a sudden you're like wishing each other, oh, hope you have a good night, hope your day is well, and this creates a false sense of intimacy where you really haven't known each other. You're just kind of taking a couple seconds or a few seconds each day to create this bond, which then makes it feel like you're in a relationship, like I said, before you know each other. So I always tell people, I mean, a lot of people come to me and, yeah, we got together, we had a great time, and we've been texting. Yeah, we text every night or we text every morning. And I tell them, step back, you know, use texting to right now to confirm the times you're going to meet or for emergencies, and stop.
Yeah.
Stop doing it.
I love that. I love that so much, because just from my perspective, the miscommunication that can occur because you don't have the tone, you don't have
exactly.
the, you know, I mean, you know, I saw a Facebook meme one time, something about, you want to ruin your relationship, keep it all on text or something. I mean, it was great. And I loved it. Listen, I want to ask you a question. I want to get your, well, I have two questions that I'm going to, hopefully I'm not going to throw you off your socks on, but do you find, I think this is an important question. Do you find that people who have ADD demonstrate a pattern relating to approaching relationships? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do work with ADD clients. I, generally speaking, no.
Okay.
I think in working with them, we just have to, I just have to help clarify and slow down in their thought process. And it's really kind of creating a new habit for them. So they can, anything, all these relationship skills or the slowing down is really about creating new habits in your life. So yeah, ADD, there are a lot of people that I work with that have ADD, but I don't find it, I just find that everybody has something that's kind of a challenge, you know, in relating, in socializing. Some people are introverts, that everybody has something, and that if we just address how to make it into maybe perhaps more of an opportunity than a debilitation or a, you know, well, I'm ADD, and so this is harder for me. It may be harder for you. However, there's absolutely a way to navigate through that.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. I tell you what, this is an incredible show. Now I'm going to ask you something, and it relates to communication, but it relates to relationships. I don't know if you deal with this or a lot, but I know a lot of people in my circles have experienced this. I read a lot about it. Let's talk about the narcissist. Talk about gasoline and fire, you know, and it reminded me of that fairy. When you're talking about fairy tale, that's narcissist and empath just popped right into my head. That empath. Oh, I understand him. And that narcissist, I got to wreck this world, you know, and I'm not the expert, but I know so many people that have gotten bogged down that muddy road that I would love to get your thoughts on that.
So give me an example so that I can be more specific, Tracy.
Okay. So I've got several I can pull from. I'm trying to think which one would be the best. Recently had a friend divorced several years ago. Didn't even realize, you know, that the situation was narcissist and that she was a lovely, delightful woman. Always fixing everything, not to get anybody upset. I'll just take the heat. I'll just do the deal with the constant attacks. Mm-hmm. It's just okay. Until the divorce happened. And then I'm going to eat you alive is what happened on the narcissist side. You know, as if the relationship never mattered, the love never mattered. My number one goal is ruining your life because you didn't do it the way we were supposed to do it.
Right. Thank you.
Is that a good example?
It is a good example. I have just an example that popped into my mind about it. So generally speaking, they come together because they fulfill an unhealthy part of each other. It's the unhealthy patterns that they're recreating together. Okay. And the unhealthy pattern is narcissists being lots of times they're very attractive or in shape, very likable, very charming. Right. Mm-hmm. So people gravitate to them just immediately. In the case that I'm thinking about, the woman was actually a ex-topless dancer. She was beautiful, in great shape. The person that she attracted was a man that liked to help out, that married her knowing that she had three children and that two of them were real difficult teenagers.
Okay.
But he got into the relationship to satisfy his need to take care of people because he had always, from when he was a small child, he would give his newspaper earning money to his father to take care of his father. So this was, as it usually is, an unhealthy pattern that has never been looked at before until they get into this relationship and maybe hit bottom, because that's what happened to my guy. He just hit bottom. He was a workaholic and did everything he could for them, for the family, for her, for whatever. So that was fulfilling his unhealthy need. It just got to the point where he actually was drinking himself to death to handle all this. And finally realized that he had to get out of this relationship, or it was really going to take his life. That's kind of dramatic, but that's the way it was. And so he finally, they did get a divorce, but you know what? He just gave her everything that he wouldn't have to fight about it, have a conflict about it, just go away. So I guess knowing yourself and realizing I think a lot more people know about narcissism now than ever before, and kind of realizing that here's a good one. Here's a test. Why are you attracted to the person you're attracted to beyond physical appearance? Right? So the healthy checklist is, well, we share a life vision. We have the same values. We can communicate lovingly through conflict. We support and encourage each other. It's those healthy things.
Yeah.
That you look at in your, and it's not really a checklist as much as just what's really going to sustain a happy, healthy relationship.
Well, that's the word that came into my mind was longevity. Yeah. And then you said sustain.
Right.
You know, it was always presented to me, God, you're so gullible. You go off with anybody. You know, you believe anything anybody says. And that's when I really started looking at, why do I do that? I believe, you know, I would buy, you know, ice from an Eskimo. I mean, so gullible. And I started looking at that. And of course, I've always been a teacher. I've always been passionate about helping others and always loved animals and hated cruelty to children. You know, I mean, just the human component. And then I started looking, then I stumbled on an article about empaths, which in turn led me to stumble onto articles about narcissism and that volatile connection. And then I started looking around and seeing the number of people that I had in my life that were either in relationships of that makeup or had finally gotten out of relationships of that makeup. So I know it's very, very popular, and that's really the reason I brought it up.
And let me just mention just one thing when I mentioned how do you look out for this.
Yeah.
Another very important thing in all dating, in all relationships, is slow it down. Slow it down. We don't jump in. Well, what we do is jump in three dates where, you know, physical relationship, having sex, and then you go from there. Then you're off and running. Okay. The real healthy paradigm is to take at least 3 months. That's what I recommend, to get to know somebody over a period of time. Waiting a little bit before waiting 3 months or longer before you have a physical relationship is only going to help you in the long run. It's only, and it can be hard because everybody else is doing it. It's a cultural norm to get into a relationship quickly and, you know, take your time.
Well, you know, that reminded me of something that I say and refer to in communication. We're so in the computer age and we're so in the cell phone age and we're used to an instant window popping up and an instant this and an instant that. And I say to people in terms of communication, people aren't computers. Don't communicate with them like they are.
Yes. That's wonderful. You
know, hold off on the pop-up window because you're not going to get it because they're not a laptop. They're a human. And let's get okay with that is what you're saying, which is great. That's a great advice. Well, I'm going to have you hang on for just a minute, but this was so incredible. And we didn't even cover half of what I wanted to cover. I'm definitely going to have you back. I knew that you would be so chock full of golden nuggets. I wouldn't even be able to pack them all in. But I am going to wrap this round up and definitely have you back on the show. Guys, this has been an incredible incredible podcast with so many golden nuggets. And Elizabeth, tell everybody where they can find you. If you guys are looking for love, or even if you're looking for love within yourself, this is the woman you want to talk to. So where do they find you at, Elizabeth?
Thanks, Tracy. My website is ignitedivinesparks.com. ignitedivinesparks.com. And I coach people locally, and I coach people all around the world. So we can coaching in classes online very, very effectively. So
yeah,
please
yeah.
feel free to drop me if you have any additional questions or want to talk to me, please get in touch.
Elizabeth, you are top notch. You're a top notch communicator, friend, and love expert. And thank you thank you for being on the show. It's just been a treat.
And thanks for the great questions.
Yeah, thanks for the answers. And thank you, listeners, for listening.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back next time with another great show. So we'll see you next time. And thanks for being here with me on Captivate the Room. And you can always find me at CaptivateTheRoom.com. We'll see you next time.